This is The Guardian.
Bridget Armitt here on Gadigal Land with the full story.
It does seem to be a harbinger of a different kind of world, a world in which the strong get to set their own rules.
Guardian columnist and host of Politics Weekly America, Jonathan Friedland, is no stranger to Donald Trump's norm-busting presidency. And the decision to join Israel in a war with Iran is just one more example of Trump's willingness to push the global economic and political system to its limits. Today, Jonathan Friedland on what it'll take for Donald Trump to walk away as his war expands beyond the Middle East. It's Thursday, the 5th of March. Jonathan, welcome to Sydney.
Very, very good to be here. Thank you.
It's fantastic. It's headed politically and its relationship to the rest of the world, especially under Donald Trump. So I have to start by asking you about this war in Iran. What do you think it's going to take for Donald Trump to walk away from this?
I mean, that is exactly the question I've been thinking about a lot. How does this end? Even as it began, because there were questions about, you know, how and why it began, people were sort of thrown into it without much preparation. But now there is automatically a lot of wondering about how this ends. I'm just going really with the sort of playbook of how Donald Trump has operated in the past. So I'm watching two things, really. One of them is the markets, just very broadly put. The one thing we know from Donald Trump is if the markets get jitters, he tends to back down. We saw it many, many times over the tariffs. That's what led to that phrase, taco, Trump always chickens out. As soon as the markets got a fright at one of his multiple tariff proposals, he would then sometimes, you know, back down, come down off the ledge. We saw it again over Greenland when he was threatening to say, we're going to seize Greenland by whatever means. The markets reacted very badly. He then went to Davos and said, don't worry, we'll come to some kind of deal. So if the markets take great fright, and that would obviously be driven by a huge surge in the oil price, which in turn leads to inflation, then that, I think, is the kind of thing that will have Donald Trump looking for the exit. The other thing I'm watching a lot is literally television, meaning one of the things that animates Donald Trump, we know, is he watches a lot of TV, and if ugly images are on television for which he is blamed, he then also tends to step back. It happened at a series of points during Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza, where when the pictures got terrible, that would be when he would say, he would make noises, signals that he wanted things to conclude. So if there are pictures of a terrible atrocity with civilian death that the American public see on their TV screens, I think you could imagine Donald Trump saying, okay, now let's talk about the end game.
I can imagine the markets eventually, or not eventually, maybe perhaps relatively quickly reacting. But ugly images on television, that's going to be hard from such a secretive state like Iran.
It is. And that, what, you know, we know that in January of this year, across a two-day period, January the 8th and 9th, there was an enormous massacre by the Iranian government of its own people. Some figures, CBS News, estimate 30,000 people killed in 2 days, which would make it one of the biggest single-event massacres, the biggest single-event massacre, rather, since Babi Yar in the Second World War under the Nazis. So, and yet out of that, there was almost no images because for the very reason you say that Iran switched off the internet and controls and clamps down on press. So that is, I agree with you, unlikely. It could even be that, you know, that somehow there is an accident, some unforeseen event that leads to a sort of mass casualty incident somewhere, unpredictable. We don't know. But pictures on TV that make world opinion, American opinion, say, this is awful, this has got to stop. That, along with the markets, I think are the two things that actors breaks on Donald Trump. Again, purely based on just what we've seen of him in the past.
Just taking a bit of a step back and historically, how do you see this current war parallel, for example, with Iraq?
Well, I think it's fascinatingly different, partly because of how the road to it is so different. So The ground was laid for months and months and months before the US, you know, international invasion of Iraq in 2003. The ground was really being laid from September the 11th, 2001 onwards. There were months and months and months of frenetic international activity and political activity. You know, from my own country in Britain, Tony Blair was making the case for international military intervention in Iraq. There were meetings at the UN. There was one resolution, then demand for a second resolution. There were reports of inspectors, George W. Bush making the case over and over again, obviously in the honesty of that case, debated endlessly, said there were weapons of mass destruction. It turned out there weren't. But the ground was laid. This time there has been nothing like that. This came out of, in effect, nowhere. I mean, people who watch the region were expecting and bracing for action. But it wasn't as if Donald Trump had been out there making the case. There had been the odd remark about how frustrated he was about the talks with the Iranian regime about Iran's nuclear program. But to lead to this huge military offensive, none of that sort of preparatory work was done. And nor was there any, in this case, any attempt to really build an alliance. There's an alliance at the center of it, which is the US working with Israel to do this. But the idea of bringing on what we now often refer to as the middle powers, the likes of Britain, Australia, France, Germany, those countries, it was very important to previous American administrations that there be a coalition, even if it would be quite symbolic, to be able to say here's Denmark and here's Nepal and so on. And those countries often lost lives. Their service personnel lost lives. Here, there's nothing like that. You know, it happened. My sense of a lot of the allies is that either they were given minutes of notice or no notice, that they maybe knew about this when they saw the TV pictures. And that was partly, I think, for intelligence reasons. They worried that they didn't want anyone alerting Supreme Leader Khamenei or the others to the fact that there was about to be action. But the order, the sequence has been the reverse this time, where you've had the action and then the case is made for it after it started. And then we get questions and discussions about how it happened and what the motive were. It's all been out of sequence. But, you know, it's just one more example of how with Donald Trump, he doesn't follow the usual rules.
I guess it's also hard to bring those parallels together until we see how Iran plays out as compared to Iraq. Before we get on to the electoral repercussions for Netanyahu and Trump, I just want to pick up a little bit on the allies issue and the international world order. Lots of people saying Mark Carney has said the international world order is over. But if there's nothing to replace it, are countries still going to behave as if it still exists, i.e. will follow America eventually?
Well, that has to be the great concern, that this is now a world of might is right and the strong take what they can and the rest will just have to stand by. In which case, that's a world in which Russia can grab Ukraine, and it's a world in which China will and could just grab Taiwan. This is not quite that in the sense that there's no talk of an invasion. It's not as if the United States is seizing Iran. It's not comparable in that sense to, you know, Russia, Ukraine. And there is an argument they will be able to make, which is this was a regime that was illegitimate, killing its own people on the streets, as the Iranian regime proved it was doing in January. Now, that argument is hardly being made. It's an odd thing. It sort of slips in and out of view by the United States. And then they will also be able to say, look, Iran posed a military threat to a key US ally, Israel. And that is obviously, again, hard to argue with when the Supreme Leader, you know, constantly and repeatedly said his goal was the destruction and elimination of Israel. It's for it to be, you know, wiped from the map. So it's not quite analogous in the way that it would have been if the United States had literally invaded Greenland, for example. It's not quite of that order, but it didn't go through any of the usual hoops. There wasn't any even of the sort of lip service to international law that a lot of people did feel happened in the Iraq case, of going through the motions of UN backing and UN resolutions. So it does seem to be a harbinger of a different kind of world, a world in which the strong get to set their own rules.
It feels a bit cold asking you about what this means electorally, because obviously there's people dying in Tehran, in Iran, in Israel, and huge repercussions generally for the region. But what does it mean for Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump at the ballot box? And are they thinking about that?
Well, it's certainly the right question to ask because it is an election year in both those countries, in the United States and in Israel. Now, in Israel, it's most obviously an election year in the sense there will be a general election. It has to happen before October, where the government could be voted out. For a long time, Benjamin Netanyahu has been obsessed about the threat from Iran. It's in a way the thing that has defined his career. He's been warning about Iran since the early 1990s when he was, you know, a relatively junior official, but one making his name. You know, he was deputy ambassador of Israel to the United Nations, but on TV warning then that Iran was a matter of weeks away from a nuclear bomb. This is goes back to 1993. You can go back that far. He's always warned of that. Electorally, I think he would love to go into the next election saying, not only on my watch have we seen the toppling of Assad in Syria, the decapitation of Hezbollah and Nasrallah in Lebanon, the, again, decapitation of Yahya Sinwar of Hamas in Gaza, but now the ultimate head of the snake, as he would put it, the backer, the patron of all of these enemies of Israel, the regime in Tehran, the leader of that regime has gone. And I think what he wants to be able to say is that regime has gone. For him, I don't think it was about, you know, striking some new arrangement about uranium and so on. He just wanted this regime gone because they are sworn arch enemies of Israel. And while Israelis have been sitting in their bomb shelters night after night after night, now in this recent week, they've been doing that for years because of the last 2.5 years coming under fire from Houthi rockets from Yemen, who backs the Houthis, the Iranians, Hezbollah, who backs Hezbollah, the Iranians, and Hamas. And Iran was a patron of Hamas too. So if he can go to the electorate and say, I'm the guy who took out our arch enemy, I think he thinks that's an election winning platform. And my guess would be that as soon as there's a cessation of this round of hostilities, he will call an election in Israel. I mean, it has to be by October, but I think if he could call it in a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, there's then a 90-day period before it happens. But I think he would do that. For the United States, there are midterm elections. Now, there it's much less clearly electoral because Donald Trump's own base do not like foreign adventures. He was elected as the man who will end wars, not start them. The MAGA movement, Make America Great Again, one of its defining principles that we would no longer be in the forever wars that it associates with the old Republican Party of George W. Bush and his father, that instead Donald Trump will come in with a kind of America first isolationism. He is angering and upsetting his own base with this, and it's certainly not delighting the rest of the American public. The opinion polls are nothing like the kind of approval that previous military interventions got. So electorally, I don't see there's an upside massively for him. I think that's another thing to think about when he wants to end it. But for Israel, I think elections and politics, and look, with all politicians, it's never very far away.
Just briefly, when we look at the Gulf states, they've been hit by Iran. It's not clear how much they're going to get involved in this conflict, but how might they be feeling about Donald Trump right now?
Well, I imagine them being divided because on the one hand, they saw him, and they were right to see him, as a chum, as an ally, a friend for them, a business partner. Their whole strategy has been to act as if they were a kind of oasis within the Middle East where, yeah, crazy stuff might be going on other places, but here in these Gulf states, you can do business, profitable business. There can be tourism, there can be international sporting events, art institutions, museums that we're going to create in Abu Dhabi and elsewhere, this sort of island of commerce, of wealth, tourism, prosperity, and stability. And so, yeah, in the backyard, there may be crazy things happening, but you're safe here. That whole strategy has, in a way, been upended by this, because notice what was struck so early on, within day one or day two, the Iranians hit Dubai airport, they hit hotels. That was to quite literally blow up what had been the Gulf states' premise, the strategy, which was to say we can have normal, predictable, safe lives here. Tourists going to Dubai as if they were going to, you know, the Costa del Sol in Spain. At first, they may have been furious with Donald Trump for messing with their stability in this way, attacking Iran, knowing that this would be the response. But the fact that the Iranian response came so directly, not at military targets hitting US bases in the Gulf, but at these civilian, as it were, targets, hotels, airports, did that make them then think, well, you know what, in that case, finish the job, take out this Iranian regime, because we cannot have hanging over us this kind of sword of Damocles, this rogue regime in Tehran that can disrupt everything we've built here. You know, the fact that these airlines are all seized up, airspace closed, tourists stranded, this is terrible for their brand, if you like. And so you can imagine them saying, in that case, we would not have supported you starting this because it was bound to cause instability. But now you have Israel, the United States, you've got to win this thing and take out this regime once and for all, because we can't afford to risk this happening again. So their calculation may be changing, but I think it would be, it's not what they, just like MAGA voters, didn't bargain for Donald Trump being the guy to start this kind of thing. They too will have been surprised and disappointed. This is not what they expected from Donald Trump, the guy they wanted to just do deals and business with. This kind of war and upheaval is bad news for them.
Not what they expected. I feel like that's generally the description for Trump 2.0. Jonathan, you'll continue to cover this on Politics Weekly America as it goes on, as well as all the other movements. Thank you so much for your time. It's great to see you.
Thank you.
That was Guardian journalist and host of Politics Weekly America, Jonathan Friedland. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Rafka Tuma, Karishma Luthria and Miles Herbert. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. And the executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. Don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story and Politics Weekly America wherever you listen to podcasts, including on Spotify. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.